Okay. We talked about obedience back in January, and I literally read this whole chapter out loud. I'm not sure we knew we were going to read through it together, but I read this whole chapter aloud on obedience because it is just so foundational, and I couldn't say it any better than him, so I just read you all his information. In your book, this is on page 17, if you have it, if you have the green book. I believe it starts on page 17. And it says here in the third sentence, "Parents, determined to make your children obey you, though it may cost you much trouble and cost them many tears." And I love that quote because the truth of the matter is that the duties of parents, according to the Word of God, is training, nurturing, discipling, disciplining. It's a work. It's a job. And it is a job for eternity. It's about their hearts and their souls. And it's very easy to fall off on one side or the other where you are like, this is too hard. I'm not going to do the work. Or you're legalistic and you require things of your children that God doesn't. And then you raise up little Pharisees. And so that's some of the stuff we talked about last time we did duties of parents, as far as we don't want to raise up Pharisees. We don't want to be an example of hypocrisy. We want to practice what we preach, and that's what our kids will catch from us. And so when we get to the issue of obedience, it is hard work in the labor years. It's not only that you are spending every minute of the day making sure your children don't die, because they could, you know, there's so many ways that they are, you know, need to be protected. But you're also, it's a constant watch over, how did they just respond to me? Did they do what I do? You can't just say, go do something and they do it. They're little. They have to be walked through the process. It's very hands-on, this whole obedience thing. And so I call it the labor years, because your mind is just constantly, every little thing. Okay, are you alive? Okay, good. Are you obeying? Are you listening? You know, and then they sleep and you're like, okay, good. They're safe. They're in their crib. They can't go anywhere. I keep standing up, sitting up. I'm like, should I write? Should I not? So I wanted to ask you, what is our definition then of obedience? What is obedience that you're training your kids in?
To obey the first time, every time, and joyfully, or... I know we've talked about that, I don't remember.
I know. Technically there's like four, but we're like three or more important than the four. There's another definition I want to go over, but there are three things with a fourth add-on. let's see. Shepherding a child's heart says without delay, without excuse, and what was the other one?
Reason.
Is it without arguing?
Reason.
Or is that excuse?
Questioning.
And then what's the, we'll have to look it up in shepherding. What's the one that we strive for, but it's not necessarily a requirement?
Joyful.
The attitude.
Cheerful.
Cheerfully. Cheerfully, immediately, and thoroughly are the ones that I worked on with my kids, but then the cheerfully thing became too much of a big deal. And my husband said, we're not called to obey every single time with the right attitude. We're just called to do it. So what is this obedience? What is the definition that allows for us to not always do it cheerfully as long as we do it? Can you think of a definition for... Okay, I'll just give two. Yielding to authority.
Sounds good.
Yes. I got that from Wikipedia.
Wow.
So... what is even the world's definition of obedience? It is yielding to authority. So our children, we're teaching them to obey. That means we're teaching them to yield to authority. And why are we teaching them to obey us? God commands it.
So it goes well with them. Something like that.
There's a promise there. We'll go well.
Yeah.
Okay, what else?
It trains them.
Trains them for what?
Life. Yeah, the real world and
their hearts to be prepared.
Bigger than that.
Yeah. Obey God.
Go bigger.
For God.
God, there you go. What's bigger than life?
It's eternity.
Okay, the reason we want to teach our kids to yield to our authority is because we only have so many years to teach them to yield to authority. Because once they leave us, life is authority. The way J.C. Ryle put it in our book, he said, we are not created to live independently. We are created to live within a structure and a system. We are created to obey the governing authorities. In Romans 13, it tells us, obey and honor the governing authorities that are over you. Ephesians 6:1, children, obey your parents, what? In the Lord. In Deuteronomy, it says, we teach and train our children about obeying the commands of God. And so we are not training our children necessarily to obey us because we're so wonderful. We are training our children to obey us because God told us to. Ephesians 6:1. So when you are telling your child to stop doing something, it is if God is telling them to do it. Now you need to make sure that you don't think you're God, but that you constantly remember, you are to obey, child, because God told you to obey me. In obeying me, you are obeying God. So you are just the middleman. That way, when they disobey and they don't yield to your authority, you remember, oh, they're disobeying God because God told them to obey me. Does everyone understand the circle there? Circle of thought. So, we do want our children to yield to authority, but one of the issues in the fall of man is that parents sin by not taking on the authority. And our culture is very anti-authority. And that so permeates us that even we ladies in the church are sometimes scared to be the authority. And that's definitely, if you've read Shepherding a Child's Heart, he talks about that in one of the first few chapters, a whole chapter on we have given up our authority. And we've said, well, that's, you know, just too hard, or that's not nice. Throw my iPad. Yay, for carpet. So we need to obey, we moms, dads, need to obey God by being the authority. Being authority has its privileges, and it has extreme responsibility. So it's not an easy task, and that's what we talked about at the beginning. I want to read from page 39, Implications for Child Rearing. It says, Ted Tripp says, I'm interested in helping parents engage in hand-to-hand combat. Okay, this is a battle. On the world's smallest battlefield, the child's heart. You need to engage your children as creatures made in the image of God. They can find fulfillment and happiness only as they know and serve the living God. So if your goal, moms, is to raise children that are have a fulfilled life, a happy life, it's only found in God and in the way He tells us to live. He tells us to live in this authority structure. And then let me read this one more section. You want the quality of relationships in your home to reflect the grace of God and the mercy for failing sinners that the character of God demonstrates. So we want to act like God in His kindness, compassion, love, patience, and even authority that He gives us. You want your punishments meted out to be appropriate and to reflect a holy God's view of sin. You want the values of your home to be scripturally informed. You want to control the flow of events so that it is never chaotic, but rather a well-structured home. You want to provide a healthy, constructive atmosphere for your child. Those are great goals. But we have to constantly remember, it's all about their heart. Why do we have authority and structure in the home? God says it's for their heart. So it's a useful illustration to repeat again that God is over all things. And then He puts your husband as the head. Now, you can imagine this as the general of the army. So God is the ruler of all, and then he has a general. Is the general worth more in God's eyes than the soldiers?
No.
No. No. He people are created in the image of God, male, men, women, etc. Then he puts the wife. Now, I don't know all my military terms, so correct me if I'm wrong. I think the general's a big guy.
Yeah.
So then, would commander fall under here somewhere?
Yeah. It depends upon the branch of the
okay.
military.
You guys will get my drift, though, right? General's the big wig. And then, and that means the buck starts with him. So if the battle fails, guess who God's looking at? He's not looking necessarily at the wife. He's looking at the husband. I made you the general. You created the action plan. You went into battle, and everyone died. Guess who's responsible? So then the commander comes under the general. And then down here you have the children. Okay, the everyday soldiers, so to speak. Now, God also says that the husband and wife work together to help lead this group of soldiers. But these children, these soldiers down here, are not on the same level. There is an authority structure for order. It is not God being mean. It is not because he thinks men are more special. It is because he designed it to work this way. And when we follow in God's ways, that is when we find this fulfillment and happiness. It talks about God's gift of joy in following his ways. So again, I say the wife and husband must be able to mutually communicate, make a plan, but it's that final decision that rests here with the husband, with the general. The final decision lies in him, and that's what God holds him accountable for. And that doesn't mean he's, you know, necessarily yay for him, he's better than the rest of us. No, he has this hard job, this self-sacrificing job of being the general. So it's helpful to get that picture of how obedience needs to go in the family structure and the why, and to understand obedience is yielding to authority. Any questions about that? Yes.
I know it sounds funny, but like, since we can't visually see God,
uh-huh.
and the child is seeing us, and then we say something like, well, because God said so.
Uh-huh.
How is this reinforcing it with scripture that can give them that healthy fear of God?
Sure. Yep. Okay. Yep. They, I mean, so beneficial to have that Bible, maybe that you keep right where you always discipline. And you might put the little markers in there where you go back to Ephesians every time. You know, you can just even go back to that verse. We did. It was our main verse for forever, or Colossians. There's another one that's similar. So you can say, you know, God says in Ephesians 6:1 that, or, and now once they get old enough to talk, I say, Gabe, what does God say about this? Children, obey your parents in the Lord. He has to say it now, you know, or, you know, we'll walk through other verses. Okay, there's a problem with the way you're talking to your brother or sister. What does God say about that? Because I taught them the verse, they say, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. So you're teaching them God's words. So it is especially helpful to quote the verses to them.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can write down, like, these are the key issues in my family right now, and find a verse for each of them. There's the if-then chart that we've talked about for her discipline, and it has the most common sins that children, and it has the verses right on there. There's the little booklet, Wise Words for Moms, that I had pinned in the bathroom where we discipline, and I could flip to it and say, okay, good, there's the heart question, because sometimes I was like, bleh, you know. What's the heart question I need to ask them right now, you know?
Okay.
Not, why'd you do that? Usually they're like, I don't know why I did it. Not a good question. So, anyhow, so we all, everyone in this right here, we all have the same master. We're all walking on the same path. Our children are our brothers and sisters in Christ. So like I said, it's not that the parents are better than the children. We're all to be walking the same narrow path to heaven. And we're saying, come along and see. But they're squirreling off to the sides in their disobedience and sin. And so we're calling them back through teaching them obedience and yielding to authority. So they yield to our authority. They learn to yield to the government's authority. And we pray that when they leave our home, that they are yielding their own hearts to God's authority. That's our goal, is that their hearts are towards God.
I know that you've said before that the first verse that you teach them is the Ephesians 6:1,
uh-huh.
Colossians 3:20. When did you say, for a lot of these moms, that you move past that first verse?
When the issues are bigger than just obedience, I would say. Like with the two-year-olds, it's still mainly that. But as you come up to an issue, say they're just constantly not listening. And then you could say, a wise man will grow and increase in wisdom, from the Proverbs. Or fools despise wisdom and instruction. We call that godly name-calling in our house. The Bible calls many actions foolish, and so we'll talk about being foolish. So
when they can understand a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely pass 2, 3, 4. Okay. But yeah. I mean, looking back, I definitely could have brought in more. I wish I had, you know, there's always that retrospect. I wish I had elaborated on that a bit more with certain things. But we have to remember, their brains may not understand necessarily that a woman of discretion is, you know, like a pig with a gold ring on their snout. Like, that is a great picture, but if your kid's never seen a pig and they don't understand the value of gold, you know, it's,
that's right.
So you've got to hold on to that a little bit, I would say, and keep up with the most important things. But if you think they're understanding, then you go for it. Okay. The other thing that I read in Trip that I wanted to add on to Ryle was about being a student of your child. In this, especially in this obedience issue, I have 6 kids. They are all so different from each other. The way I interact with one is not necessarily the way I interact with the other. One may need very stern discipline, and one may need, if I just give them a disapproving look, they're shattered, you know? So you have to be a student of your children. And some people say, I don't understand what happened to that child. I raised them all the same. I have a problem with that. Why are you raising your children all the same? Except if it's God's pattern. But every child is different. So you have to be a student of your children. What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? When I look at one of my children right now, big issue with pride and being competitive. When I look at another one, it's the self-righteousness in the heart and never wanting to be seen as being disobedient or bad, so they hide everything. And so I have to think individually about each child, their strengths, their weaknesses, where I need to work on their obedience. It's different. It's different for every kid. So you want to be a student, and you want to make their consequences for disobedience appropriate to that child. So if you just always spank 3 swats no matter what child and what problem, you know, what sin, then you may not be getting to the heart.
I have a question. I hear sometimes parents saying, do you see your brother or sister acting like that, or do you see mommy acting like that? Is that a bad comparison to say, you know, bring yourself to your child's level? Or does mommy say that, or does your brother say that? How do you feel about comparing?
Well, I wouldn't go with the siblings necessarily. Look at the other unbeliever. But yeah, I mean, we're called, you know, Paul even said, you know, do what we do. Follow after our pattern. And so I do ask my children, especially when they like bicker between each other, I'm like, do you see mom and dad communicate like that? Why not? How come mom and dad don't communicate like that? So I will call them to godly examples. Not that Mark and I are perfectly godly. I'm not saying that. But even there was a lady at our last church. Oh, she was just always serving. Serving. I never saw her sit down. Every event, she was there. She was serving. I'd be sitting there eating, like, I'm going to work afterwards, and she'd already be cleaning up my plate, you know? And I'd say, guys, look at her. Look at her example. So, yeah, you can point them to godly examples.
Just be careful the motive of it. You know, if the person is saying that with the wrong, you know what I mean?
Sure.
There have been, like, if it's an exasperation.
Kind of a threat, yeah, or exasperation.
Right. If you're doing it in such a way where you're trying to train them up, look at that, you know, type thing. Maybe not even in the heat of the moment, because everyone's, you know? It's like,
that's
so,
exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, that's like, in the heat of the moment, I'm like, you know. But later on, when things are calm, right, Johnny? There's my little laugh.
Yeah.
But no, so that's, yeah, just be careful of the timing, I guess. Is what I'm
saying. Well, it's funny that you said that, because I actually did that this morning to Caleb.
Yeah.
Because he lacks self-control. Uh-huh. So when he stubs his toe where he gets hurt, he screams.
Oh,
and
I know.
Like
I know that.
So I said, do you see mom and dad doing that?
Uh-huh.
Right. So I.
Good.
That's fine.
No, we're saying you are a good example.
But okay. Just being careful.
But then I laughed, like, I'm glad.
I'm picturing it.
Confirmed.
No. Yeah, I want, you know, when I say those kinds of things to my little ones, I'm saying, what do you see as the difference? Why aren't mom and dad responding like that? You know, and it's just a recognition. Oh, there's maturity. Oh, there's, you know, a growing in self-control. Especially with my child that lacks self-control. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Really? You're going to make a big deal out of this?
Yeah.
There are so many more big things in life, buddy. And then the other thing in obedience that I want to talk about, which, again, we've talked about before, but like we say, we need to hear things over and over. Don't just train your kids to obey you.
Right.
I see this a lot. Your kids are great at obeying you, but show no respect to any other authority. Again, that's not training them for adulthood. In adulthood, we have to obey the laws of the road. We obey the laws of the land. We obey the governing authorities. We obey the church. You know, there needs to be submitting to the church authority, to your daughters, to their husband. Your boys are someday going to be men. They're going to have to understand the structure. And so practically how I do this is when there are other adults around, starting with your family, grandmas, grandpas, aunts, uncles, older cousins, things like that. So here's an example. My sister-in-law is over for the weekend. She tells my child to do something. As long as it's not sin, I'm going to watch and make sure that my child does what aunt says to do. That is showing that I expect them to obey. When my kid won't obey, I'll say, excuse me, Aunt Amy told you to do this. I expect you to do it, and I expect you to say, yes, Aunt Amy. So, because I expect my kids to say, yes, Mom, whenever I instruct them, so that I know that they're listening, and they're now accountable to do it. So I expect them to answer Aunt Amy. If my parents are in the house, my parents may ask them to do something, and I'm like, ooh, I would never ask them to do that. You know, I have that twinge inside me. I don't really care. I don't want, as long as it's not sin, back it up. Because when you do that, you're training them to learn to obey any authority that you have authorized. When you drop them off at Sunday school, I expect you to obey your teacher. And I'm going to ask your teacher if you obeyed, and I expect to hear a good report. So, and you're going to have to do that like every time. You pick up your child. How did they do? Did they obey you? And then you can have that opportunity with the teacher, the nursery worker, the Sunday school teacher, the daycare, whatever it may be. Following up, knowing that they're obeying other people, because that is life. That is training them to obey God, whom they cannot see. Yes, Steve.
Just about the grandparents part.
Uh-huh.
So I realized that, let's say my mother-in-law's over, you know, say a few times a week. Like, I wouldn't want to contradict her in front of Abigail, because I don't want to be.
Good, yeah.
But then let's say I think it's okay for Abigail to use a spray bottle, but then my mother-in-law thinks that it's dangerous because she can spray her in her face. In the moment, I'm not going to contradict her, so she tells Abigail, no, you cannot play with this because it's not a toy, it's dangerous.
Uh-huh.
But then it's still contradictory if after my mother-in-law leaves that then I let her play. Do you know what I mean? It's it's confusing for Abigail.
Uh-huh.
But wait, Mom thinks it's okay, but my grandmother thinks it's not okay. And I think that early on there was a lot of confusion there, of because then I kind of toggle back and forth. Sometimes I'm like, oh, you know what? I know that, like, my mother-in-law doesn't want her to play with this, and so she gets used to playing with it. Then every time she comes, then she picks it a little of data with me. You know, like, why are you letting her play with a water bottle? I said it's not safe, but then I don't think it's not safe. So, like, I have so many, and that's just one tiny example, and they're like 50, you know, if not, okay, maybe not 100, but like a number of those.
Right.
And so then afterwards, after she leaves, then we have to this long discussion about a single tiny issue. Is it safe to play with a water bottle?
Uh-huh.
Or, sorry, a spray bottle.
Yeah.
What you could do, you are, if it's in your home, the rules of your house is it's okay. So that way Abigail doesn't confuse. It's the rule of your house. It's okay to do it here. But if it's causing grandma to stumble, then maybe what you can do is put the water bottle up while she's there, put the toy she doesn't like up. But in terms of training Abigail, these are the, because our children would say, well, so-and-so gets to do it at their house. Ah! The rule of our house is no. Or the rule of our house is yes. So that's what you do with Abigail. That's the rules of our home.
Right.
So,
and I, as a mother...
But you don't have to say that to grandma.
Right.
You don't do that. Just if you know it causes her to stumble, then put all those things just up while she visits.
She would say that it causes me to stumble.
Right, but you just keep
yeah,
that
we
away.
We have a really big because Grandma babysits at your house.
Oh,
I mean,
so that's
most days.
Well, not really anymore.
Oh.
I mean, she was coming for like, you know, like 2 or 3 hours, like a few days after Zoe was born. Like, you know, now she comes a lot less. But just last week, like, I mean, we just could not come to an agreement. And in the end, I said, like, you really just have to respect me as the mom. I know that it's okay for Abigail to use the spray bottle because she's been using it for a whole year and she doesn't spray her face. She knows how to use the spray bottle. And I've asked my mom, other believing mom friends who are older and wiser, and asked 5 different older, wiser moms. They all said it's okay. One mom said that it's actually something at a Montessori school that a 2-year-old is supposed to learn how to use. It's a skill to use a spray bottle. So, I mean, on this particular issue, I had to, like, put my foot down. Versus some other ones, it was kind of, like, gray, where... You know, most of the time I agree, fine, safety issues, like, more. But then there are a lot of these gray areas where it causes conflict, and it's just that it's confusing for Abigail to know who to obey. If I think it's okay, but then the grandmother thinks it's not okay.
Yeah. That's where you and your husband have to kind of provide the united front, where, you know, you talk it through with him and you can say, what's your husband saying?
Matt
has said that he's okay with her using it, and you make him the bad guy, so to speak, because he's the general. if he's willing to take the heat and say, I don't see this as an issue, it doesn't need to be an issue. But I know that's kind of murky there. So, you know, but I liked Bev's idea. If you know something's such a big deal, like the spray bottle, put it away when she's there. That's a very non-confrontative way of dealing with it.
Because my mom, she lived with us, and there were some issues that she had, and I would just, so it wouldn't be a constant battle. And then Abigail having to see it, or my children having to see it, it was put away. It was not disgusting, you know. Hey, grandma's coming upstairs. Put it up. It's sharp. It's sharp. Had to go up.
All the sharp things away.
Dude, she's coming. So,
yeah, because otherwise you might just constantly.
Right.
Might
and
just
what
constantly
is the verse
have to battle.
In the Bible? I was thinking about the verse about peace.
As far as you be a peaceful man.
Be a peaceful
Romans
man.
Romans 12.
That's your verse right there. I want to be at peace here. So if this is going to cause problems or a war, I put it up. But it is
interesting. Yeah, maybe
I have to talk to you. Don't be sorry. It's good. I hope that's...
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay. Yes, I liked Bev's non-confrontative way there. All right, anything else about obedience today before we move on?
At this age, I think he would obey, but he delays what I do.
You go, I think we talked about this too, go and get his hand and model doing what you want him to do.
Like usually I tell him come, I probably have to say it like 2 or 3 times and he will come.
Okay, so you say it once. When he doesn't come, you go get him and you say, you need to come.
Okay.
And make a habit of training him with that maybe for a week.
Okay.
And then try doing it 2 feet away, 5 feet away, across the room. But let's teach him exactly what you mean when you mean come.
Okay.
So I know with one of my kids, it seemed like I was speaking another language to them when I said come. And again, actually, Cain, it was my oldest, so.
mine too.
Yeah, maybe we just think they know what the word come means, but I also would do this, come. And then also when I was out in public, if we were somewhere where we need to be quiet, say in church, I don't even have to talk now. I have a sign. If they were fooling around, I could snap and, you know. They would
still do that.
My teenagers still turn when they hear a snap.
My mom does that.
Yeah.
I still make all some flesh.
So, Cain, I would just, start at the beginning again. Come. This is come, baby. You're coming to mommy. Oh, now you've come. Good job. Yeah, you're going to do it. It takes more time than, come on, let's go.
So I don't repeat. Just say once, then...
Otherwise, you're training them the second, third, fourth time obedience.
Okay.
Right. If you don't move after the first command, then you are training them to delay.
Okay.
You say, why will they obey the first time? Because you've trained them to obey the third time.
Okay.
We get into these patterns and we don't even realize it sometimes.
Until somebody sometimes says something.
Yes. Thank goodness for the family of God, our husbands, grandma, whoever it is.
It's very helpful. V. Mayhew, I think, said this at the women's conference that she trained her kids. She did this, and it meant children obey your parents in public.
Oh.
Do that. But
who did that?
So instead of like snapping, but just went so they could see them. And they knew what verse it was.
Oh, wow. Oh, I like that visual.
So if they can see you.
Children obey your parents. Right?
Yeah,
four words.
I got 4 more minutes. Okay.
You have to teach it at home before the moment.
Children obey.
Do you expect, like I said, toddlers to completely have like clean up their toys?
Like, I'm still waiting for my 15-year-old to completely clean.
Okay. So, like, I mean, when you say obey, like, you know, if you're telling a toddler, like, let's clean this up, I mean, at what point, obviously right now we have to do it together, you know, or it's mostly me stomping.
Yep, you get down on the floor, you call her to help.
Are they supposed to be able to just clean it up themselves?
It really depends on the size of mess you're talking about. I mean, if my kids dumped over a bin of Legos this big, I would not expect a 4-year-old to clean all that up. I wouldn't even expect my 7-year-old. I mean, it's just so daunting a task that you want to send in another sibling, go in and help. And that's just the mercy. You're showing them the mercy and graciousness of God and helping them in something. They may have made the mess, but when you see them totally disheartened, coming alongside and saying, yeah, we don't want to make big messes because it makes a lot more work, doesn't it? So, and you can control the amount of toys that are out so that the mess isn't so big. Keep some put away, rotate them through. We have bins of blocks like this. So we have blocks, Lincoln Logs, Puff Balls, and the other day, all 4 of them were all over our library because we had some company. All 4 of them. We're like, okay. You two get the box, you two get the puff balls, and then at the end we'll see where the Legos are. Because it wasn't, you know. So you've got to make it manageable, and we're just, you know, in general, we're really hard on those poor firstborns. You know, the younger kids, you have more kids, you're always sending in the older kid to go help. So really, because it's your older kid, you should be coming in to help. So. Mm-hmm. But you may also notice a really nasty attitude. Well, okay, well, you have a bad attitude, so now mommy can't help you because now you need a consequence for your attitude, so I'm not going to help you, and I'm going to set the timer, and I want it done in 10 minutes. So you can use methods like that with the timer to help them. Just gives them a goal. Goals are helpful. We'll talk about that down here with redeeming the time. All right, so I'm just going to erase this in case I need to write anything here. Telling the truth. Who can tell me how important this is?
For God is a God of truth. So it's a huge sin.
The Bible says lying lips are an abomination. What else does the Bible call an abomination?
Homosexuality.
So, wow. The way you view homosexuality is also the way God views lying. Lying lips are an abomination. God hates the liar. It's in the list of sins of those who walk in darkness, are those who lie and do not tell the truth.
And Satan is the father of lies.
That's right. Satan is the father of lies. So the question more is, how are our words affected to lying? It can be very subtle. It can be exaggeration. And over-exaggerating things, under-exaggerating things. I was reading a MacArthur sermon where he talked about all the ways the world lies to us. Advertising. They sell you something for a high price. You think it's worth more. And it's really garbage. All the TV ads and even Hollywood. It's a big lie about if you look this way and dress this way, your life is perfect. So we are constantly surrounded by lies because Satan is the father of lies, and our world is under his dominion right now. But we know that we know we're told not to lie, and Ephesians 4:29 though also says, "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only a word that is good for edification and building others up, according to the need of the moment, that it may benefit those who listen." So, what does that verse tell us about lying and telling the truth? Do we say everything that pops in our mind because we want to be truthful?
Speak the truth in love.
In love. So love again must guide us. Our love for others guides us. Say, I went through this with one of my kids. She said, but I'm telling my sibling the truth. I really dislike them. That's being honest. That's telling the truth. You told me never to lie. Okay, yeah. But is that loving? Is it benefiting them? Is it meeting the need according to the moment? So there are definitely things that we are commanded not to say, but it isn't lying. It's loving others. Someone take a breath to say something. Okay.
They're whispering to their child.
Oh, okay. So we want to be careful to never let lies cross our lips, whether exaggerating, telling an outright lie, what the world calls a little white lie, still a lie. And we want to be sure that everything we say is seasoned as with salt and spoken in love. MacArthur says that lying in your home should have the worst consequence. So if your child outright lies to you, lies to a teacher, lies to anybody, it should have a double consequence in your home. So, Bev, what did you guys do for lying in your home?
Force wax.
That'd be a deal for some of my kids.
How many
did
you
eat
for Caleb?
Eight.
Okay.
That what did you say?
That's a double.
Eight.
Four
wax. Spankings. Yeah. So if you know that the heart of your child gets the point across in discipline with two spanks, then you might do four and with a little bit more strength. In our home, we did firmer spankings as well as 15 minutes alone on the bed because my kids hate it. They're so used to the group that they hate being alone. And so we did the disc spanking and the extra consequence of being separate, because their sin is separating them and their lie is separating them from their relationship with God and with others. And so in light of MacArthur saying that, before we ever had kids, we filed that away and made it the worst consequence in our house. Now, if your child comes to you and tells you the truth about something bad they did, you want to encourage that honesty. So now we're talking about, you want to encourage them to tell the truth. You want open lines of communication. So if your child comes and says, I did this to my sister, you would want to affirm that. You could have lied, but you didn't. You didn't hide it. That's a good thing. And so you might consider between you and your husband that if they come and tell you the truth about something before you hear about it in any other way, that they're not going to get a consequence. But then there's also the consideration that there is still in our justice system, you commit a certain crime, you still get a consequence. And that's taking that is maturity. So for example, manslaughter. If you accidentally kill someone, are you going to go to jail? Yes, you still will. So you might have to decide, you and your husband, we want the open lines of communication with our kids. We want to possibly not give them a consequence if they lie, but there might be something so big that they still have to face the consequence, but I will also encourage them and build them up that they came and told the truth. And you can say that, and they will see your attitude about that, how proud you are of that. Sorry.
Depending on the child, a kid could know if I tell mom I'm in trouble and use that almost as a form of manipulation.
Sure.
So trying to watch for that too.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of times you may not have all of these things written out on the wall in your home, that things are hard and fast, and that's again about being a student of your children. If I know I have a child who's very prone to constantly disobeying, and they come and tell me something they did, I'm going to rejoice that they're maturing and that they're finally getting it. And that they are understanding the idea of their conscience. And so I would encourage that. But if I have a child who is kind of laid back and never gets in trouble, you know, like, so you've got to, you do need to weigh it out. Is that?
Now, this is the battle I'm in constantly, just because Caleb will tell me everything that he does, disobeying. And it's like, I feel like I'm not consistent there at all. And Jake has told me before, because I almost disciplined him every time. Then Jake can notice I'm pulling back. Caleb, talking to me about things. But I'm like, okay. And then I can't not discipline him because.
Yeah. Because you want to keep that open line of communication.
I want to keep the open line of communication. I just want to shepherd them through that thing and understand, you know, there's consequences. And I had a mom once tell me, not in this church, but that I shouldn't discipline him anytime he says something, like just as a rule. If he tells me, then just talk to him about it, but never discipline him for it. I thought, well, what if it's really bad? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. What if it's like, you know, I did.
Mom, I broke a kid's leg at school today.
On purpose.
On purpose.
Oh. Oh, okay, thanks for telling me. Like, I can't.
Let's go right on this cast.
So, yeah, that's a fine line for me, knowing.
Oh, if we had the wisdom of Solomon, right?
Because I don't want, because especially with, I think for me, my child is in public school. He's away from me, you know, 6 hours a day.
Surely he needs a discipline, right?
And I need him to be telling me stuff, too. I need both of it. And even I talked to the teacher last week, and she was just talking about there's an undercurrent in each classroom of stuff that's going on that the teacher doesn't know about, even in seven-year-olds, and some of the stuff that I hear, you know?
Yeah.
And so Caleb tells me everything. But then I, you know, come down, and, you know, so I'm just, it's really hard for me to know what to do because I don't want him to shut down.
So,
well,
I guess, go ahead.
Well, he's telling you, let's say when you pick him up at 3:30 in your car.
Yeah, he tells me the second I open the
door. So, I know, see, that's what I figured.
You have your notepad out.
He's done that with me.
Somebody told me this bad word.
So, what I'm thinking, though, is if it's waited kind of that long, should you not discuss that with you that night with him? And then it's the two of you working through it with
that's
him.
That's what's hard, though, because
okay.
He either works really late.
Okay.
Or I have to do a lot of this stuff myself.
I see. Mm-hmm. So
but that's what I was going to say, though, is time. If you wait and you think through it, and then there's a habit of discussing the school day after dinner, after you've had some positive time with him and dinner, and then you say, okay, buddy, everyone else is in bed. Now we're going to talk about your school day and what you told me happened. And I would say this would be in a non- need for spanking offense, you know,
sure,
because there's other consequences that can happen. Or you can even, I've asked my kids sometimes, well, what do you think we should do about that? You know, what do you think would be the right way to solve that in your heart? How are we going to deal with this in your heart? You know, when they're older and they know the consequences that have gone on in their house, you know, sometimes my kids will say, well, I should get a spanking for that. And then you already know. Okay. Or they'll, you know, they'll bring up something else and they'll say, that's a reminder that I need, that is what I need to do. Or, you know, you're right, you do deserve this, but instead I'm gonna have you do this extra chore for 3 days just as a reminder for the next 3 days that you're not to do that.
So you're saying that I should not react right away, but think about it and either talk to Jake or wait?
I think that might help, especially because of your immediate response.
Because it does. I mean, it hits me the second I open the door. Like, it always catches me off guard. It's like, oh!
No.
Whoa.
I mean, this cold water cushion.
And I'm just like, sit down. And you just start crying.
Eat your goldfish. Yeah. And we can talk about that one more sometime, too. But, you know, there's so much in parenting that we need the wisdom of God. And that's why we just keep saying, go back to the Word of God. Be in the Proverbs, Mama. We need the wisdom, and we need to be talking to other people just about situations like this and working through and trying things. And, you know, it's okay to change some things midstream if it's not going the way it should. It's okay to be constantly evaluating. And there were certainly a million times when my kids were younger that I would second guess, is this being effective? Is it okay to be hard this time and not that time? And I think it's just a wisdom of evaluating every situation and not, it might be easy to make blanket rules. It's harder to work through the heart every single time. So
my fear is just that you start shutting down for me and I don't know what's going on.
Right. But it's his third year now?
Yes.
And he's still telling you everything. Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes he'll start telling me something, and he'll go, then I'm like, what? Tell me. And so Jake has told me he's talking about tell me.
Chair. Everyone's sitting on the carpet now. We'll just take out some chairs next week.
I think that's a good idea.
Okay, so one of the other things before we move on to redeeming the time is what we were just talking about, even with Meg's issue, is you want to be thinking about the relationship you're building with your kids now for the teen years, because you hear teenagers, it's always negative. I love my teens, by the way. I just want to say that. It hasn't been without its struggle, but that makes the relationship sweeter now. But if you keep shutting your kids down from being able to talk to you and being able to tell you the truth, then they're certainly not going to tell you what's going on in the teen years. So you are an authority, but you are a kind and gracious authority. And you should be approachable. They should be seeking to want to spend time with you and talk to you. If they're pushing you away all the time, then you need to evaluate yourself. Is there anything I'm doing that's pushing my child away, closing down the lines of communication? Because we are the adults. We are the ones that should have the Holy Spirit to help us. They don't have that. They don't have maturity. They don't have the Holy Spirit. And so when we expect them to act like a 60-year-old Christian, you know, we're going to shut down those lines of communication with them. Because they are immature and because they don't know how to communicate. We have to see through that and understand from God's wisdom what's really going on with them. We need to ask them questions to pull out their heart and not just tell them what's wrong with them, but to draw it out and see if they understand, and then we can go through some explaining of what's going on. So keep the lines of communication open. Make lying the worst consequence in your home, because you want them to be truth tellers, or else they can get away with any sin if they can lie about it. And then make sure that all the words that you say are benefiting the need of the moment. Johnny's having a party for one over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, too.
So for toddlers, you know, there's a lot of pretend play. Uh-huh. And I think a few times I've struggled between Abigail pretending just as part of her play versus telling the truth. So, like, if I ask it, okay, you know, Abigail, did you make this mess? She always says yes, like, uh-huh. I did it. But then there are other times when, sorry for anything, my example, you know, for example, like, sometimes she'll pretend like she got hurt. And then we say, no, that's not something that we pretend.
Sure.
We never pretend that we got hurt, you know?
Right.
So, like, what are some areas that, when you say telling the truth, that, like, that we don't pretend about. It's not open for play. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, it's a little bit of a blur right now between pretending.
She pretends that she's being a mommy and being working in her kitchen, or she pretends she's a princess, stuff like that. You're talking about pretend play?
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of her pretend play is talking. You know, she's got kids, she's got friends, and daughter-in-laws or whatever.
Wow.
I mean, the only thing that I've right now said is, like, okay, we don't pretend that we got hurt.
Sure. So she's three?
So she's going to be three.
Yeah, she's not even three. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about just the pretending. That's childhood.
Yeah.
That's learning and growing, and that she's really copying adults or copying princesses on TV. It's a mimicking thing. But definitely, like, even when my kids would play, they would scream at the top of their lungs, and that was a big no-no. That scream is reserved only for an emergency, and I run. I run when I hear that scream. So don't even use that one in play. So it's okay to say, don't pretend that you're hurt. Don't pretend anything that is like an emergency situation, or pretend something that ends up costing you money because they were foolish. So I think maybe what you're differentiating is foolishness and pretend. Do you think? I don't know if I'm helping you here.
No, I'm lost too. Because at this age, they're just, you know, imagination.
Yeah.
habitual thing where she's trying to get your attention, I'm hurt, I'm hurt, I'm hurt, but she's really not, then that's, yeah, something you'd have to deal with if it was a pattern. But if she's just playing, and you know it's just play, you know, I guess I'd have to be there. To
yeah, she might be looking for attention, or like with Band-Aids, I had to make a rule. You only get a Band-Aid if you're bleeding.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'd be wearing 20 Band-Aids all the time.
That's
you know?
What ours was.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're encouraging responsibility. We don't waste Band-Aids. You know, you're encouraging being a truth teller. You don't say you're hurt unless you're really hurt because that's serious. And I'm supposed to take care of you. And I only need to take care of you if something's wrong. You know, take care of a illness or boo-boo if there's actually an illness or boo-boo. So definitely, yeah. Okay, so we have a quick little moment. Redeem the time. Most of your kids are not at this level yet, so I'm just going to go over it real quick. And that is that your children were created for work. You are created for work. Adam was working in the garden before sin even came. So work is not a result of the fall. It is what God created us for. But when you look around our culture, what is our culture's thought about work? What'd you say? Work is bad. Get it done so you can go play, right? But what do you see, even when you look at the teenagers? You look at teenagers in our culture. What do you see in them? They're lazy. What else?
Addicted to the screens.
Addicted to screens?
Yeah.
Media?
Leads to sin.
Yeah, this freedom of time leads to sin. And that's definitely what J.C. Ryle pointed out, is stagnant waters go bad. And so you need to consider, I'm training this child and their heart for adulthood and eternity. How do I want them to spend their life? Do I want them to go through life expecting everyone else to serve them? Or do I want to prepare them to help serve others? What would be the godly one of those?
Serve
others. So you want them to be ready. If at a moment's notice someone needs to move, they're the first to jump, to say, I'll help. If something in your house is a mess, are they going to go clean it up, or are they going to just sit around and wait for someone else to do it? So we want to train them in a habit of redeeming their time and using it usefully. You want to praise them when they work, when they throw their diaper in the trash for you, when they do pick up the toys, even though you expected it. Good job. I really saw you work hard. Ooh, I saw you sort those by colors. I didn't even ask you to do that. Good job. Whatever you can do to encourage a good work ethic, even when they're tiny. And there's a lot of things little kids can do that you may not, you know, bring them alongside you. If you're cleaning the house, give them a cloth that's maybe wet with water and have them wipe the windowsills or even a corner of the floor that isn't even dirty, just to get your little toddlers in the, this is what we do. We work together. We keep this house good together. And you're training them to work hard. We want to redeem the time, make the most of it. We want to be purposeful in what we do. Even mamas, we need to be careful of our screen time, of our laziness, of our example to them. And Psalm 90:12 says, so teach us to number our days that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. You may evaluate your life and say, you know what? I'm being idle, and I'm teaching my kids how to be idle, and I need to be a hard worker like the Proverbs 31 woman. If you go and you read Proverbs 31, you're wondering when this woman ever sleeps. And if more than anything, I mean, you guys aren't weaving. You aren't washing your clothes down at the creek and beating them out. You're not making your own grain and dyeing your own wool to make your clothes. I mean, we are so spoiled, are we not? My house is full of servants. I have a million maids at my house. It's called the washing machine, the dishwasher, you know, all the vacuum. So we are very blessed, and yet we're the most idle throughout history. And that is not happiness in life. That's not fulfillment in life, to sit around and do nothing. Can any of you think of times when you were lazy and just the ugh you felt about it? I certainly do. I certainly do. I always say, if I could go back to when I just had one or two kids and take up all that time I wasted and drop it into my life right now, that'd be amazing. But more, it's I have to look at the lesson and encourage my kids now to be diligent workers. I'm training my children how to keep up a home. They wash the dishes. They're cleaning the windows. They're vacuuming. They're helping with the laundry. They're keeping up with the bathroom. When do we do these things? How do we do these things? So in teaching our children chores and having them help around the house, we're preparing them for adulthood so that they can be organized and clean and able to serve the Lord in whatever way he gives them. And I do want you to think for a moment. Think about the teenagers you've seen in our church. Do you notice anything different about the kids in our church versus the ones you might see at the mall?
Yes.
What do you see, Susie?
They help, and they're not that loud. I mean, sometimes they get, like, they're having fun when they're playing, but they listen, and when their parents speak to them, they come or they answer to them, which is very different. I come from a family of non-believers, and I have nephews that I see daily, and, I mean, black and white.
Mm.
The children of the church are really different.
Yeah, so I want to encourage you in that. The teenagers in our church did not get where they are because their parents just let them do whatever they want. The teenagers in our church have been trained. Their parents have worked diligently through these years to work hard to prepare the kids to be available. And when we started this church 6+ years ago, there was a lot of work. We had to set things up, tear things down. So we called the teens. Come set up the nursery. Come work in the nursery. Come help out. They help in Kids for Truth. They set up the women's Bible study on Wednesday nights. So if they're here and they're a part, they know that work is expected. And so when you expect it and then you praise it, you're reinforcing that in their lives. And they see the reward of serving the body together.
You know what else I see that's different too is a countenance. A countenance of how cheerful they are to do it. Whereas, you know, you see the countenance of an unbelieving teen or one of the mall or whatever, they don't look happy. So the countenance of them, their smiles and a happy to serve.
Yeah, and when you consider it, if you never have your teenagers or early 20-year-olds helping out at church, why will they when they're an adult?
Yeah.
Like, they realize, I am a useful part of this body, and they need me here. So the teens that are needed at their church and are supported in that are going to know for their whole lives, I am needed and in the body of Christ. So that's just another reflection of how work is what we're created for. And it's, yes, to keep up our own homes, our own lives, our own bodies, takes work, but also to serve each other, to serve the church, to serve Christ in any way that he may need. And he says, while we're on earth, it's to work. And we know that someday in heaven, people always say, I'll rest when I get to heaven. But then J.C. Ryle was saying, nope. When we get to heaven, we will be working, praising God. But the work will not be any kind of burden. So.
Is that it?
That's.
Any questions?
Let's see.
Concerning obedience, telling the truth, or redeeming the time. She'll just talk.
I was just going to say one other thing. In the book that we recommended a year ago, Large Family Logistics for Everyone, because you don't know how big your family will be, and now's the time to start thinking about it. I was reading this section she has on Give Your Children a Work Ethic, and she talks about how she and her husband were raised on the farm, and their kids are being raised on the farm. And so if you consider, well, it's too much to ask my kids to unload the dishwasher. Well, consider if you were on a farm.
You need a 5-acre ranch.
There's lots of work to be done, and you can't do all the dirty jobs. Your kids are going to have to help be a part of scraping out the horse corner, whatever it is.
Yeah. Chicken coop, that was the worst.
So you might need to get some pets to help give your kids more jobs.
I say, even for me, like, I have to remember that mindset, because I did grow up on a farm where I helped build fence, and even at the age of 10, I had to take care of a bucket calf.
And it was cold in the winter.
Oh my, the ice
pool. And I didn't know. So I had to learn discipline very young. And so I need people to remember that, because sometimes it's easy to think, oh, they're not old enough, or
they won't do a good enough job.
Right, they don't need to do that, or whatever. But because I'm realizing a thought I've had even so is with my kids in public school, thinking I don't have them do as much chores during the school year. But then thinking about my life, I had to do so many chores, and I was in school.
Yeah.
So I have my kids to a different standard. But it is harder when you don't grow up with that, because
yeah,
there was just, you have to pitch in or it won't get done. And with living in the town and the city, you really have to be creative and think of things.
Yeah, even beyond chores. I know Mark's cousin in Naples, they have an acre, and you know, but they're teaching their kids to build things out of wood to make a, for Christmas gifts. You work on it all year. So there's even just a busyness that can be beyond even chores and just working with your hands. And so, like, we have a whole closet of just craft stuff, and I'm like, you know, create something. Do something with your hands. Work with your hands. Go help somebody. That, you know, go play with your sibling. That might be work right now.
Go work on your sin.
Go work on your sin, your relationship. Being diligent with their schoolwork. All those things go into redeeming the time, recognizing work is life. And, you know, let me just say as an aside, you may have your kids start learning to wipe the sink, and you teach them how to do it, and they may not do the job you like, but that's okay. Still have them do it. They're going to grow, and then if it needs to be rewiped, just make sure you do it when they're not looking. Try really hard to fix it later.
So, Meg, we were discussing about at this time asking for prayer requests.